Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 7, Episode 51. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for the sick David Todd today is Alex Cazora. Alex, it's been a while. Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday, and I'm glad to... I think the last time I was on, the Steelers were on the rough part of the season, so I'm happy to be back when the sun is shining a little bit brighter.
You weren't the cause of that losing streak, were you?
we'll find out if they start losing Sunday. You can blame me.
I hear you. Well, that'll do it for the 51st episode of the Terrible Podcast. Alex, glad to have you on. David has a problem with his voice today, so the guest that we had lined up today to preview the our weekly preview of the Steelers' opponent, which in this case would be the Buffalo Bills, we're trying to move that interview to Friday, so that'll be part of the Friday show. So Alex and I today, we'll spend a little bit of time recapping Tomlin Tuesday, going over the injury report, looking back at the game against the Giants, and giving the listeners a slight preview of what we've seen so far out of the Buffalo Bills. And I guess, Alex, we should start on this Wednesday. When we talk about Tomlin and we talk about Tuesday, it's always important to start with the injury report there. And Tomlin, I didn't find anything, what Tomlin said on Tuesday about injured players as a surprise whatsoever. You got Darius Heyward-Bey and D'Angelo Williams, both really kind of questionable, and probably Darius Heyward-Bey more doubtful than D'Angelo Williams, frankly. I think I will be surprised if either of those two players practice at all this week, or at a minimum play on Sunday against the Bills. And then the other ones that Mike Tomlin went over would be, Javon Hargrave and Shamarco Thomas still in concussion protocol. I don't think that's too surprising. Both of those players were injured in the win over the Giants on Sunday. And then Chris Boswell. Mike Tomlin left the door open at Chris Boswell and that abdominal injury. Might be able to return against the Bills on Sunday. But with that being said, it sounds like they're going to keep Randy Bullock around, and probably into Sunday as well too. So, your overall thoughts, as far as the injury report goes, and whether or not you think some of those guys play.
Well, I think just overall, for a team heading into Week 14, they're relatively healthy, especially compared, to where they were earlier in the season. So, I don't think you can complain too much. The good thing is it does not sound like Boswell's injury is a long-term thing. Even if he has to miss this week against Buffalo, you think he would be back the following week, at worst-case scenario. And it sounds like the light is on for D-Will. And, if not this week, then a much better chance for next week. So, Javon Hargrave is going to be a key guy, and we're going to talk about that when we preview Buffalo, the Bills with, a top three rushing offense in the NFL and a really good offensive line, and, obviously being battle tested with a depth. So that's the guy I might be watching more than anybody else.
I would agree with that too, especially against, the Steelers have fared extremely decent, I guess would be the better word, since losing Cameron Hayward to his injury. And when you talk about their play against the run, it's been a kind of by committee right now, opposite Stephon Tuitt. I think Ricardo Matthews has played some decent snaps along the way. Hargrave obviously has come on strong, and the only one that I haven't been overly impressed with, but he hasn't played a lot of snaps, would be, of course, LT Walton. And believe it or not, I think when LT Walton has been on the field against a run so far this season, opposition has averaged over 8 yards per carry, but not a lot of snaps for him. You know, Daniel McCullers, to me, Daniel McCullers is just a guy still, right? I mean, he has his moments in pass rush, being able to push the pocket, but still can't find a quarterback, you know, when he does that. And then when you look at him, you know, as a run stopper, he's kind of hit and miss, right?
Yeah, that's a fair way to put it. I think it's been decent for McCullers. I don't think he's ever shown the ability to be that kind of real starting nose tackle. It's going to be Hargrave's job, you know, for the long term. But I think McCullers is doing all right. You know, he's a guy that's going to attract a lot of double teams, of course. And I think the biggest thing for me is just he's staying on his feet. He's not on the ground. He's not getting cut. He's being able to use his size, because certainly it doesn't matter if you're 6'6", 350. If you're on the ground, you know, you're nothing. So I think he's been impressive in a very relative sense.
How worried are you about, we'll kind of start backwards on this, how worried are you about, you know, this unit being without Cameron Hayward in facing this Buffalo Bills, you know, run offense? It really is impressive, not only on the stat sheet but on the tape as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a big concern, and that's why I'm watching so attentively to Javon Hargrave's situation, because if they don't have him, then they're really going to be thin. And, you know, you're talking about just trying to get a rotation out there, because it's tough to play run defense for 60 minutes against a tough, physical, you know, Bills front led by Richie Incognito. You know, it's going to wear you down, and obviously the way the weather is shaping up for Sunday, 80% chance of snow, a good amount of wind, it's going to be a ground-centric kind of game, and that might lean a little bit towards the Buffalo Bills, or certainly at least, you know, make that run game even more potent and much more of a threat. So, you know, like Tomlin said yesterday at his press conference, though, the Steelers have done a great job tackling. That's been such an underrated thing. It's like a good lawyer. You know, you don't think about it until you need one. And when the Steelers' tackling has gotten better, all the concerns that were there midseason and during that four-game losing streak have kind of gone away. So you can't forget about how much better of a tackling team this has become, how much better they are getting off of blocks, and how much better they are in their run fills. And I just think overall they're a lot more assignment sound than where they've been, both in rush lane contain and pass defense and pass rush, and then with their run fills as well. So and I think a lot of that has to do with the secondary stepping up. Sean Davis, Artie Burns, seeing them become competent physical tacklers, and they can get downhill in a hurry. You posted the one GIF yesterday of Sean Davis coming 15 yards downhill to make that alley fill. So I just think overall the unit is much more assignment sound and a lot more, you know, just physical and intense, and that's what's required to play good run defense.
Yeah, what did Tomlin say Tuesday? You know, minimizing the popcorn.
It's all kernels now, no pop.
Yeah, everything's popping right now, I guess would be a great way to describe that. And you know, when he was asked to kind of describe what is attributed to this run defense playing better, he says we're tackling better, we're where we're supposed to be. We respect everybody that we play, but we acknowledge that we've got a lot to do with how we perform in that area, and we've been more consistent in performance. And I would agree with that. Look, I mean, you know, Sean Davis has made several decent fills coming downhill in the last, you know, two or three games. Shazier's able to find those creases in a hurry and dip under or over the top of blockers for some run, you know, thrown for losses and all. Even so, this is, you know, you hate to be so dramatic week in and week out, saying, well, this will be a huge test for the Steelers this week. As far as running games go, this is really going to be a huge test for the Steelers this week. Yeah. I mean, it really is, because not only are you dealing with Shady McCoy, you're dealing with a very mobile quarterback in Tyrod Taylor. Mike Tomlin spent a lot of time talking about both those players. And, oh, yeah, that offensive line is not bad. Richie Incognito, I don't care what you think about Richie Incognito as far as a human being goes. He is a bad, you know what, when you look at him on tape.
Yeah.
And even going back early this year, I was looking at some Bills tape and thinking to myself, man, this guy is so damaging, whether it be in pass protection or whether it be on the move, either side, left or right, with him getting out in space.
He's a tone setter, all right, definitely, and it'll be really fun to kind of, you know, watch them a little bit more. You know, Dave, I don't know how I feel about this game yet. I haven't picked it yet. I need to watch Buffalo a lot more. But before the season started, I picked this game as a loss for the Steelers because of that great run game, because of Tyrod Taylor's ability to scramble and make plays, and because of the ability he has to keep the play alive and the speed they have on the outside, whether it's Goodwin or, you know, Sammy Watkins. So when you combine a mobile quarterback who can keep the play alive with a lot of speed downfield, that's a recipe for chunk plays, and they get a lot of chunk plays off of those things, and some of that's by design as well. So it's a big concern. The Steelers have never really seemed to do well against scrambling athletic quarterbacks. You know, we've seen Terrell Pryor in the past and countless others. So it's a big, big concern. This will be the best, you know, rushing offense the Steelers will see the rest of the season.
Yeah, and you got to figure in, you know, on the road in their place, mm-hmm. you know, on a snowy field. Of course, both teams, I was reminded this morning on Twitter that both teams have to play on that field.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to have to look up the rule on that one. you know, it will be a good test, and Mike Tomlin was asked on Tuesday, you know, about a spy. You know, obviously, I mean, they've spied quarterbacks before. They'll spy quarterbacks in the future. Tyrod Taylor is one of those guys that you're definitely going to have to be careful with, and we've seen some quarterbacks, even some not so mobile quarterbacks. Tom mm-hmm. Brady earlier in the season, you know.
Don't remind me.
A couple of third downs there. I think Tomlin outlined it good. They got to keep them in. You know, the thing is if you let the Bills in manageable situations, third and three, third and four, there's a good chance they're going to convert either you know, mm-hmm. by air, a design run or a not design run because of Tyrod Taylor's running ability there. And you know, when you look at, and I've already kind of peeked ahead at the Bills and statistically and tape as well, Tyrod Taylor's not one that scares you with his arm unless it is kind of outside the pocket on the move. You go back to earlier this year and a couple of those triple explosive plays mm-hmm. that he had was really busted, you know, broken down, kind of Ben Roethlisberger-esque, if you will. You know, those mm-hmm. kind of, oh man, I can't believe he made that kind of play, and then 80 yards later, you know, somebody's in the end zone there. I think this is definitely a team that you got to sell out, stop the run, and when push comes to shove, when we look at the stat book after this game, I think it's one where we got to say, man, Tyrod Taylor really was able to do it with his arm.
Yeah, he's not going to be a death by a thousand paper cuts kind of guy. He's going to be all or nothing, feast or famine. So, you know, he's going to get his vertical shots. You think about the Jets game earlier this year, that shootout they had. You know, I think in a primetime game, you know, there were several, you know, deep balls, one the good one for like 80 some yards, those triple chunk plays you talked about. So I think the big thing for this is going to be, again, that rush lane integrity. And I've been meaning to write about this for a while now, but I think the rush lane integrity, you know, it's been a lot better. The spacing's been a lot better from where it was earlier in the year, and I think it's giving Keith Butler more confidence to blitz. You talk about that Patriots game and how does Tom Brady get escape lanes? Well, it's because guys are getting out of their rush lanes. They're not set up well. There's no rush lane balance to some of their blitzes. They're leaving easy escape lanes for the quarterback, and that still burns me up when I think about it. The one stare down play where Hargrave comes up free up the middle and Chicolo loses his contain, so Brady flushes out and completes the pass, and they score later in that drive. So Steelers are going to have to be really assignment sound against Tyrod Taylor. There's no doubt about it, Dave.
When you look at them from an explosive play standpoint, not many throwing the football. You know, with especially, look, Tyrod Taylor's not great throwing the deep ball unless somebody's really wide open. I mean, when you look at his I don't know if you saw that stat I put up. In fact, I'm having a hard time remembering, something like of the 28 or 29 quarterbacks who have like 50 deep pass attempts so far this season, Tyrod Taylor's down there near the bottom. And what was a little bit surprising, or maybe not, is right underneath, and Tyrod Taylor's percentage was, I don't remember, 33%, right, 34% right around in there. And one spot under Tyrod Taylor was Eli Manning. So, you know, when you look at this team and you worry about – I don't know about you, Alex, and I got a good idea that a lot of offensive coordinators do this, and that's why I usually make it my focal point when I start kind of previewing – in upcoming game on tape, I like to immediately go straight for the chunk plays that either opposing offenses or opposing defenses have given up. And you know, I kind of want to start there with my analysis and then kind of work back. And I think I've heard, you know, Todd Haley kind of talk about this before in the past as well, too. But when you look at the Bills offensively, from a chunk play standpoint, and I'm trying to pull up the stats here, not a lot so much in the past, but I know they lead the NFL in rushing you know, plays of 20 yards or more. And in fact, 18, I think, on the season lead the league. That's them. And in second place is five away. That would be Oakland and Dallas have 13 explosive runs apiece. And when you look at the Bills individually here, Shady McCoy right near, you know, just behind Ezekiel Elliott in explosive runs with 9. And it doesn't take you getting down the list very far to see his backup, Mike Gillespie with 4 and Tyrod Taylor with 5. So there you go, 9 and 9. Okay. 18 of their, what did I say the total was? 18, right? I mean, that's their explosive plays run so far this season. And the Steelers have 2 that they have on offense all season here. So definitely going to be a chore. You know, not only, look, I mean, a lot of people will categorize explosive runs in the NFL as being 10 yards or more, not 20 yards or more. So there's a lot. Yeah, you're right. There's a lot to be worried about in this game.
And let me just disagree slightly. And I just looked at the numbers right now. I haven't done really much research yet on Buffalo, and maybe I'm cherry picking the numbers, but this is the first result that popped up. Although you're right that pass game probably does not have a lot of chunk plays. If you're looking at maybe 20 plus or something, if you look at 60 plus, some of those triple chunk plays you talked about, they're tied for first in the NFL with Detroit with 4 60 plus yard pass plays. So when they get their chunk through the air, they're feast or famine. They want it all. They want that 80 yard touchdown to Goodwin or Watkins. They're not going to get the 30 yard, you know, dig over the middle. So you got to protect yourself over the top, and that's tough to do because you're going to figure the Steelers are going to play 8 in the box in this game to stop the run. So it's going to leave, you know, your cornerbacks on a lot of islands, and that's it's a tough matchup in the snow.
25 passing plays of 20 yards or more, second worst or second fewest in the league when it comes to the Buffalo Bills. And as you mentioned there, how many of those plays were 40 yards or more?
I can look that up, but 60 plus, they have 4, which is tied for first. It makes it for about 10% of the league total. So they get a lot of 60 plus plays.
I'm looking at it now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 4 over 40, and then 5, 6, 7, 8, 30 or more. So there you go. And I bet not a lot of these have come on third down, I'm willing to guess, because some of his third down tape I watched was, you know, grit your teeth if you're a Bills fan. In fact, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, only 6 explosive plays for Tyrod Taylor and the Bills on third downs this year. And in fact, and 1, 2, 2 of those were those, you know, triple, quadruple explosive plays. So the key with this, you know, pretty much as you would attack any team, obviously, stop the run, get them behind the chains, and especially in a case when you're talking about Tyrod Taylor, get them in a third and long situation. We'll preview the Bills a little bit more later in the week, and then, you know, especially when we have our guest on Friday, let's talk about a little bit, you know, a few more things that stuck out from the Tomlin press conference. But first, Alex, the mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger. Let Craig Oxane guide you through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams. Even in Buffalo this week, if you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Oxane, a call. He's an experienced nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online. It's very easy to do that, Alex. You can apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Let's get back to what Tomlin said on Tuesday. We already talked about, you know, he covered the Bills. We already covered the injury report. What else stuck out to you as far as what Tomlin said?
Well, you know, I wrote about a couple things right after the press conference, kind of the things that stick out to me the most. And I guess this one is pretty obvious, but David Todd had asked about it, and you know, Tomlin's answer to the decision to go for it on fourth down, you know, what goes into that. The Steelers went with about 2.5 minutes to go to try to close out the game up 21-7, and Tomlin said, you know, he uses his gut. There's no analytics involved with it. It's just based on how he feels, how he thinks the defense is going to play it, and if he's comfortable with that. And, you know, that's why whenever we try to figure out Tomlin's decision-making, it's a fruitless effort because it's not really based off of hard numbers. There's going to be an inconsistency with it when you use your gut and you're just kind of going off of the feel of the game, and you can't judge, you know, what it is, what Tomlin thinks and feels. So, you know, that's not a surprise there. But Steeler fans, either you like it or you hate it, and the groups are pretty obvious at this point.
I bet that's the way he sets his fantasy lineup as well, too, right?
I wonder if that's just how he, like, grocery shopping. There's no list. I'm not going to play by a list. Just going to feel out the aisles.
I wonder. Use my gut reaction here. Avocado or no? Look, I mean, that... The thing is he'll go and say, look, that's who we are with the 2-point conversions, and then, you know, you had the game a few weeks ago where he didn't go for two, you know, right after the first score there. So look, he's not afraid to go for it in certain situations. He's not afraid to send a kicker out there if it's a 56-yard field goal. You know, so yeah, you're right. Just who Tomlin is. The biggest thing, I think, you know, we already talked about stopping the run and how he said minimizing the popcorn. What did you think about his comments on the special teams specifically?
You know, he was kind of critical of them, and, you know, he was asked just about overall how they're doing, and he says they must do better, but then he did kind of save face a little bit at the end. Maybe not save face is the right term, but kind of give a caveat when talking about all the punt returns that have been bouncing in front of AB. He said it's kind of, you know, partially by design by the punting team trying to keep it away from Antonio Brown. But, you know, I've had this feeling for a while, and this is me using my gut here. This is me pulling a Tomlin, but I just feel like his relationship with Danny Smith has always kind of been a little turbulent. They don't really see eye to eye. They kind of disagree on some, you know, philosophical stuff. And just from some of the comments that they've made, like last year with Jacoby Jones, you know, Bob Labriola, right after they signed Jacoby Jones, you know, Labs asked Tomlin, how long will it take Jones to kind of get ready for kick return duty, being new to the team? And Tomlin said about 24 hours. And, you know, Danny Smith was asked the next week, how long is it going to take Jacoby Jones to get a feel for this thing? And Danny Smith said, well, it's going to take a couple weeks because you got to get the timing down and stuff like that. It's little things like that have added up. And I think that Tomlin's probably not too happy with special teams, and as much as I love Danny Smith and have talked about him, that's a relatively fair assessment of the way that unit's performed in the last couple weeks.
Well, what would you give for a 60-yard kickoff return?
Or a 40. They haven't. It's been literally over a year since they've had a 40-yard return. I think Marcus Wheaton did it once last year or something.
And it seems like every time we turn on the TV for one of these games, you just see one or two of them a game, right? You know?
Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice. I would love it. I don't know. I would wish Justin Gilbert would go out there and do it, but Tomlin doesn't want to use him. But it's not even just about that to me, because I think sometimes we focus too much on the return unit and the flashy stuff, but just stuff like punt, you know, the punt protection, making tackles, staying in your lane, penalties obviously were a big thing in the last game. So I think that, you know, usually it's been pretty good, and the coverage units have still been, I think, relatively solid with some injuries, but there's just a lot of small things that kind of seem like they've been creeping up.
Yeah, the hidden yardage when it comes to those kind of things. You know, look, I mean, how many we've talked about it ever since the podcast was created many moons ago about, and always seems like the Steelers offense is bad, you know, year by year, some of the worst, you know, starting field position. It just very rarely, especially when the defense is not forcing turnovers, it seems like you go three or four games without starting a possession on the opposition side of the football field, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, look, as good as Roethlisberger can be, it sure would be nice to give him a short field or two a game, you know. Mm-hmm. Because, look, that's a unit that sometimes likes to shoot their own selves in the foot. With penalties, with drops, and we saw that, of course, this past week against the Giants. You know, sometimes they can't get out of their own way, as good as they are. So you know, it'd be situations where you think that, well, at least they're going to come away with three. You know, on this drive. I don't get it with Gilbert right now. You know, I'm more confused about that than I ever was with Brandon Boykin. Look, I don't expect Gilbert to be on the field defensively right now, but I mean,
the thing is, Dave, Tomlin is not like using defensive players. He likes guys. He said it before. He likes guys that touch the ball all the time, that are used to the ball in their hands. He's never used a defensive guy. He used Allen Rossum in 2007, and like the only guy that's ever even touched the ball like once on defense is Joe Burnett, who had something like two kick returns or something, a couple, you know, 2010 or whatever year it was. He likes offensive guys.
Yeah, but, I mean, Gilbert doesn't have obviously in Cleveland he didn't get to return many last year, talking about kickoffs. But you know, the year before he returned a few, I don't remember him having a fumbling problem there. But, I mean, look, I mean, it is what it is, I guess. I mean, He wouldn't put I'm drawing a blank. Colts running back now.
Todman. How dare you forget Jordan Todman, Dave? That's your
guy. Geez, he wouldn't put Todman back there. I mean, why should we expect him to put Gilbert back there, right?
I mean, I would love to see Gilbert back there. I'm not trying to excuse it. I'm just trying to explain it. That's his thought process. And instead we get a broken finger Sammy Coates over there for whatever reason.
Yeah, and Sammy Coates is not good enough. He can only see the field offensively for four steps. No, I assume you listened to the last podcast and David and I going kind of tinfoil route there. Is something still not adding up here in your opinion when it comes to Coates? Are you buying all this?
Did you listen to Roethlisberger's interview this week or radio show?
Yes, I did. And go ahead.
Well, because I haven't, but I had one follower tweet this to me that Ben said that Coates was not involved in the game plan this week. Is that true? Do you remember Ben saying that?
Ben said something to the effect of game plan and the way the game played out and the play calling, yada, yada. I'll write about that today. I've been meaning to. Okay. But come on. I mean, I don't understand it.
Right, that's what I'm trying to say. It's just kind of weird. And, you know, I just started watching the game film from last night. And, you know, I was just one play, and I posted the screenshot up on Twitter. But it was right after a possession for the Steelers offense, and they come off the field. And there's a shot there. They get the big wide view, and there's Sammy Coates just by himself on the sidelines. No Danny Smith around, no wide receiver around, no Richard Mann around. He's just by himself on the sideline, and it's like, you know, why aren't you with a group? Is it because you just know you're not going to be involved? You know, it just feels like, you know, he's not getting the opportunities, he's not being engaged, he's not trying to get those mental reps in. So I don't know. You know, I think you and I and David Todd have talked about it, that I still think Sammy Coates is going to be an important part to this team if they really want to be that Super Bowl contender where they can get that vertical threat on the outside. But I just don't know if or when it's ever going
to
happen.
Yeah, it's starting to come back to me what Roethlisberger said, and I think he mentioned, and like I said, I'll write this up after mm-hmm. we get off the podcast this morning, but something to the effect of, you know, you can't just have him out there and only be a deep threat, which seems to be – in other words, I took it as being, you know, my old reference to when Dree Archer and Chris Rainey were with the Steelers. Every time they come on the field, you know, they're going to get the football because they can't do anything else, you know. So, you know, such is kind of the case right now with Sammy Coates. When he comes on the field, you might as well put the red siren on his helmet.
Right.
He's going deep, you know, and
right.
and of six, you know, so let's say you have him out there, six plays, probably three of them, Roethlisberger is going to go deep to him. So maybe there's the whole they can't get Sammy to accomplish anything else. You know, we've seen him have some troubles even catching some bubble screens, and I thought for sure the best way to go in this game this last week against the Giants was first play from scrimmage, run that bubble screen out there, because not only did we find out that how useful running that bubble screen would be to set up other plays later in the game, you could get a guy that has one catch for 4 yards since week five back involved in the offense. Well, obviously none of that came to fruition. Sammy played what, 4 offensive snaps in this game against the Giants, did not get a target. It just I don't know, just 1-1's not equaling 4 for me right now.
Yeah, and although you're right that, you know, he has the big alert that he's going to be the deep threat, that's fine with me. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel midseason. That's what he's best at. He's still been very good at it, even, you know, just the way he's running his routes. Look at the Colts game.
You can send him deep and not throw to him. That's okay.
Right. Yeah, expand the defense vertically. That open up somebody else, force the safety over the top or the corner to play off or whatever. And if they don't respect it, then you can throw it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, although that's all Coates is going to be this year, is just a deep threat. But that's good enough for me. That's what this team needs.
And, you know, with all due respect to the way some of the listeners feel, that's really all Martavis has proven he could be right now anyway.
Well, he's been a little more of an underneath guy that can get yak. But, yeah, I mean, it's what his calling card is the deep threat, sure.
Now he, you know, I like his gallop a little more. Sammy has a sneaky gallop to him. Martavis runs like a deer. you know it's fast when you whatever version of the tape that you want to watch with him, whereas Sammy's more, in my opinion, more of a little bit of a sneaky fast. But regardless, it's going to be interesting. I mean, you got 4 games left here. You know, you got Ladarius Green seemingly getting on. I thought Roethlisberger had some great comments when talking about Green on his radio show about, you know, he understands backyard type football. That's a good thing when you're dealing with Roethlisberger. But then again, you see, you know, standard type plays. I'll let you speak a little bit about this, you know, talking about how Todd Haley set up that seam busting touchdown for Green on Sunday.
Sure. You know, I think Green obviously had a tremendous game and showed the asset he can be, but I thought a lot of his big plays were just kind of either the play breaking down and the Giants losing him or Todd Haley setting it up. And we did the breakdown of the touchdown, which was their fake bubble screen, which, you know, I posted GIFs back from 2012 against Washington, Haley's first year here, where he's running that fake bubble screen and throwing vertical. And that's what they just did there. So you can check the article out on Steelers Depot from the other day. But it's one of those things where you just fake the bubble, and Landon Collins, who's great safety and playing fantastic this year, bites on it, comes downhill, and Green's running vertical, and by the time Collins realizes what's happening, it's too late and Green can walk in. So that was all on Todd Haley. So if you want to, you know, attribute, you know, an actual touchdown to Haley, that's the one to do it.
It's always the offensive coordinator's fault when a team doesn't win, and when the Steelers do win, Ben Roethlisberger changed the play.
Exactly.
You know, time and time. Look, I mean, the all offensive coordinators, you can go through them. Some have more identity crisis, you know, identity issues as far as what they want to do than others. Certain ones stack plays to set up plays later better than others. You know, I think we forget, though, that you know, you have a quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger. He has liberties that he can take as well, too. Mm-hmm. Todd Haley has his warts. You're not going to get me to tell you that he's not. He's not perfect. But I think for the most part, this season he's done a great job. I mean, can you control holding calls? Can you control false starts? Can control backup center in there not having the right head bob? Those things are gonna hurt. And when you get into second and 20 and third and 12 situations, you know, what do you want them to do?
All right, yeah, that's been a problem, and the team's definitely got to clean up. You can't have 12 penalties in a game. It's surprising the Steelers beat the Giants as handily as they did and comfortably as they did when they had 12 penalties for 100-plus yards, and the Giants only had, I forget, 4 or 5 the whole game. So that stuff's got to get cleaned up across the board. There's chance for good field position. There's chance for drives. You know, how many drives were stalled out this year because of a penalty in the red zone or the red zone fringe, and, you know, you have to settle for 3 or whatever the case is. You know, that stuff's got to stop.
Do you remember what the stat was I put up on Twitter earlier in the week, the plays that the Steelers offense faced this past week of over 10 yards?
I don't, but I imagine it was a high number.
It was a very high number. I mean, you know, that stuff. And what just that, man, you facing those 15 or more yards, you know, and in several cases, mm-hmm. those 20 yards. So, yes, the penalties have got to stop. The drops got to stop because, I mean, let's face it, they had, what, 4 or 5 there in the first 15 minutes of game time, right around in there, you know. Mm-hmm. That stuff most definitely has to stop. Anything else you want to talk about as far as offense or defense, or, you know, should Mike Tomlin be concerned about Le'Veon Bell's fumbling issues as of late?
No, I agree with you, Dave, what you told David Todd on Monday. It's just kind of a, you know, law averages, regression to the mean. Obviously, you don't want to see it happen, but I don't have a big concern with it.
And Mike Tomlin evidently doesn't either. He says, I'm not overanalyzing it at this point. Like I mentioned earlier, his large body of work, he's done a great job of taking care of the ball over the course of his career, not only here, but even dating back to college. And aside from the numbers, his approach or his mentality every time he takes the field, he does so with that in mind, with ball security being the quintessential element to him having a good day. So I'm not overly concerned about it. Now, if he fumbles in this game against the Bills, mm-hmm. I might start being concerned about it. But normally a very ball secure type guy. So just, you know, let's just hope this is a little bit bad luck that he's going through here. Go ahead.
Real quick, do you want to get to the not roster move the Steelers made, but the guy that they lost, Alhash Shabazz? Do we cover that yet?
I can't remember. I think David and I set it up that expect Shabazz to make it to the practice squad early this week, unless he gets claimed off waivers. And that's exactly what happened. He got claimed by the Houston Texans. This is a guy, look, the Super Bowl chances, I think, are still intact here, maybe. a guy that was kind of the perfect 54th man on the roster, right?
Yeah, I think the team is probably kind of bummed out by that. It felt like he was a guy that they were high on and had some promise and, you know, of course, was not going to be a major contributor, if at all, this year, just a special teams guy. But I think someone they really liked and impressed in camp, and it's kind of a bummer that, you know, he's in Houston now.
Yeah, and we'll have to see. I mean, look, the Steelers lost Mahalik, right, earlier in the season. And then once he got healthy the Steelers ultimately wound up getting him back in the fold, if you will. So, look, I mean, is he going to stick with the Texans on the Texans 53 the remainder of the season? There's a chance. There's a chance that happens. And if that happens, there's a chance he signs with them a future deal, because I think he can look at the Steelers roster right now and say, do I really have a which team am I most likely to see maybe a defensive snap or two? You know, I think you can look at top and bottom and say probably not so great. Look, both very slim, but probably a little bit better chance with the Texans than with the Steelers. So we'll have to see how that plays out. And like I characterized him, I think he was a good 54th or 55th guy on the roster, a guy that most times you're not worried about clearing waivers. You know, a guy you can bounce back and forth and gives you some decent stuff on special teams there.
And the one guy that was not happy about Shabazz losing him is Matthew Marksey. He wrote a couple of articles about that. He was not a fan of that. And I understand. I think there might have been a couple other options, but, you know, I don't know exactly what all went into that decision.
Maybe Matthew will get a Christmas present later on. Maybe Shabazz will circle back around some way. Alex, put your math hat on. There will be math.
There will be math
in this episode today. Look, I have been one that has really taken this Steelers defense to the woodshed several times. Most specifically, their pass defense. I've written a few articles from a statistical standpoint, talking about the adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat and how, you know, earlier in the season, if you use history in that stat as a guide, there was absolutely no way that the Steelers are going to win the Super Bowl this year. I also said, look, it's going to be tough, very, very tough for them to lower that number down to a respectable level come the season end. I think I said that around the end of week 7 or week 8, right around in there. When you look at what this team has done over the course of the last 3 weeks. Now, is this an arbitrary number? Is this a number that I pulled out that fits a narrative when it comes to the Steelers? You damn right it is. I was upfront and honest with you about this because of the sheer fact that we only have 3 games of numbers, the last 3 to look at. Their highest defensive ANY/A adjusted net yard stat for those 3 games was 3.73. That was a game against the Colts. Over the course of the last 3 games, they've held opposing offenses to a number of 3.73 or lower. I also went back, you know, I just did not pull that out and then not research behind it. If you go back and look, dating back to 1982, as far as regular seasons go, only 27 times now, or in 27 different games dating back to 1982, has the Steelers defense registered in adjusted net yards per passing attempt number of 3.73 or less in 3 straight games in 1 season. I know that's a lot to quantify there, but you know, that's quite huge. And in 2000, you want to know how good the 2008 Steelers defense was? They accomplished that feat of the 3.73 number or less in 3 straight games, a total of I think it was 5 times, right? Because or 3 times, because it was games 10 through 14 that they held opponents to that number. As good as the Steelers 2000 defense was, Alex, not once did they accomplish that feat. And the last time the Steelers defense accomplished the 3 in a row with a defensive adjusted net yards of 3.73 or less was during the 2011 season. Now, okay, how important is that 3.73 number compared to defenses around the league this year? All right, somebody tried to, they evidently didn't read the article, and I always know this is going to happen whenever you get into stats. He says, my point is the NFL is full of completely arbitrary stats, and this is no exception. He evidently did not read the fact that I said that this is an arbitrary stat. Okay, but I wanted to give that a little bit of depth since I wrote the article. How many teams this year have registered, or defenses have registered, a adjusted net yards per passing attempt number of 4.0 or less in three straight games. Okay, would you say that's a less arbitrary number, Alex? It's
a nice round number. It gives some breathing room. I think that's a good way to approach it.
And it's still a. I mean, I think I even started my post. When writing about this, I wrote, the lower the stat, the better, and any time a defense holds an opposing offense under 4.0, it should be considered a great accomplishment. You would agree with that, correct?
I would.
Okay, well, after writing this article, and thanks to this commenter not reading my post and then commenting, it forced me to go back and research my numbers a little bit more as far as related to 2016 numbers. If you want to use a less arbitrary 4.0 number, only one team has still recorded that number or less in three straight games this season, and it's the Steelers defense. Okay, so my narrative was built further around there. Now, the easy argument is, but Dave, their last three games were against the Giants, the Colts, and the Cleveland Browns, and two of those teams had inexperienced quarterbacks. I guess what I'm getting at is how impressive has his last three games been, and can we read anything into these numbers?
Well, I think the Giants game was supposed to be the test to see if the defense had taken a step or if it was a product of playing below average to bad offenses. And I think that they passed that test, obviously, with flying colors against the Giants. So I think that it's a tougher argument to make to say they played bad teams when they played a really good passing offense with the New York Giants that have a ton of weapons and experienced quarterback. So, I think that it's fair to give them their credit. Like you said, we've been pretty critical of them throughout the season. So it's fair to give them the credit. So I guess my question to you, Dave, is just what's their overall number now, and does that speak to a much better chance historically of Super Bowl hopes compared to where we were a month ago?
I haven't looked at it. I obviously know where their number – look, I mean, after Week 8 of the NFL regular season concluded – now, obviously, not all teams had played the same amount of games due to the bye, mm-hmm. but, Week 8 is usually that second really good measuring stick where you go, okay, this team's not going to make, this team's going to do this, this team's that going to do that, this team really has a good pass defense, this team doesn't, this team's average, yada, yada. But after week 8 of the regular season, the Steelers had a defensive adjusted net yards per passing attempt number of 7.12. That was the ninth highest in the league, and I think about that time is when I wrote, there's absolutely no way this defense. There's no way do they have a defense that's good enough to win the Super Bowl, at least statistically speaking, going back in time. Okay, entering Week 13, where we're at right now, the Steelers' defensive adjusted net yards passing attempt number is 6.19. So they've lowered it almost a full point. Okay, in the last five, six weeks here. They're 6.19, and I brought this up in a recent podcast, I think with David. That's 11th lowest in the NFL now. Okay, so you go from the ninth highest in the league to 11th lowest in the league, and with four games left and looking at who they have on their schedule with these four games, there's a chance this number could come down to, I don't know, can they get it to 5.5? I don't think you can rule that out now. And like I told David, I think I'm going to save that research for a couple more weeks. Man, if they wind up lowering this thing in half a season from 7.1 to, let's say, 5.5, I wonder if that's ever been done. But that's a,
because you said that number doesn't move too much after the half of the season,
right? It generally doesn't. No, usually you are, as Mike Tomlin likes to say, we are who we are. But in essence, the Steelers' defense hasn't been who they are, right? Because, I mean, you got three players that are playing a lot of snaps. When did Ryan Shazier come back to this team? Around midseason, right? Wow.
Yeah, they got healthier, obviously, with Dupree coming back and the maturation of Davis and Burns. And
so, I mean, when you look at this team from really week nine on, this isn't who they are or were or mm-hmm. might be. This is a different team. So it's just something to think about. Look, I'm not running from the other side of the fence over into the other into the backyard screaming, we're going to go to the Super Bowl. We're going to win the Super Bowl. But I have been quite shocked. Now, the question is how much does the tape match the statistical numbers?
Well, I obviously they're improving, and we've seen the maturation of Burns and Davis, and they're getting more pressure. Their red zone defense has been fantastic. You can credit Mike Tomlin almost directly for that and the approach they take to the situational football. So they're playing the way the defense has to play. As I've said, the way for this defense to help take the team to a Super Bowl, you know, it's still going to be through the offense, but the defense has to be able to create some splash plays and play some lockdown red zone defense, and they've been doing the both during this three-game win streak, and the results are in kind. They're winning.
You know, theoretically, though, we could be looking at the Steelers holding another offense to 4.0 or less defensive adjusted net yards per passing attempt, but yet win, but yet lose the game because they couldn't stop the run.
Yeah, true.
So I guess what I'm getting at is there. What are we going to learn about the Steelers defense this week against the Bills? What are we most hoping to learn about this defense against the Bills?
I guess we're going to learn really, make sure they are that true sound tackling team, and if they don't regress, and I think I'm going to learn a lot about their ability to contain and their rush lane integrity, because they have faced some more immobile quarterbacks. Scott Tolzien and Eli Manning are nowhere close to what Tyrod Taylor is, so I think just learn about exactly how assignment sound this team is, because they're going to have to be on their P's and Q's for a game like this.
Are you worried at all? Is most of your concern heading into this game still defensive side of the ball as opposed to offensive side of the ball?
Well, the offense worries me some because the weather's going to be a big issue. And it's like the Cleveland game where the Steelers just could not throw deep. They tried it for once early in the game and the wind took the football, and they really didn't have the element throughout the rest of the game. And while the run game's been good, we know it hasn't created the chunk plays that sometimes we wish that it did. So, there's some concern for the offense because of the way the weather is. And the Bills have a good front seven and a defensive line with Kyle Williams and Jerry Hughes and Marcel Darius, and is Darius even playing? I forget, he's been in and out, but the Bills front is good, so there's some concern for the offense as well.
I'm a huge Kyle Williams fan, you know that, right?
I know, you've been ye for years now.
You go back to several years ago, that game where he just Chris Kimuatu, I mean, he just ate Kimuatu alive in that game. I think Chris had a few penalties in that game as well too. That's the game, if memory serves me, that the Buffalo should have won on that deep pass to who was it? Stevie Johnson. That in fact, I think wasn't that Sean Swisham's first game as a Steeler as well too, but you can't think about Steelers Bills, I don't think, without going back to that game many moons ago. Now the Steelers are, I think, 3-0 in their last three games against the Bills. But I mean, look, this is a Rex Ryan coached Bills team now. This is a you want to talk about a desperate team. The Bills absolutely have to win out, right? I mean.
Yeah, they're what, 6-6? Yeah, they got.
If they don't, they're going to need a lot of help. I mean, they would obviously have to win their final three games. This is a game in their crib. It's dangerous. Rex Ryan still knows how to coach a defense. The Bills have a defense that can get after the quarterback as well too. Anything else you want to kind of hit on before we wrap things up, Alex?
No, I think that's everything. I just going back to Tomlin's press conference for 2 seconds. It was funny him talking about Ross Cockrell and kind of admitted that we pushed him pretty hard and we made him be a veteran before he really was a veteran. And I think Cockrell's really responded to that challenge well and is still the Steelers' best cover guy, consistent guy right now. So hats off to Ross Cockrell because I think people don't understand how much he was thrown into the fire just getting added late to the roster last year, playing a month later, going through all those reps, getting 60% of the reps after for the entire season and playing almost 100% the rest of the way, and then having to step up and be the guy for this year who's shadowing, in a lot of cases, the top receiver, whether it's an A.J. Green or Brandon Marshall or Sunday Odell Beckham Jr. Don't underestimate how difficult that is. He's still just trying to figure out, you know, the intricacies of this defense, and he's probably a lot more comfortable now, of course, but easier said than done. Not a lot of corners can do it, and Cockrell has, so credit to him.
So, and on top of that, you're not cutting Mike Mitchell this week, are you?
No, and the Mike Mitchell hate club is a little quieter this week. So did you see the one, I don't want, like, making these big statements and stuff, did you see that one Bengals reporter that said Mitchell's dirtier than Vontaze Burfict?
Yeah, I mean, look, I also wrote about McNabb saying Le'Veon Bell's declined this week, so I don't know.
What's the worst take?
I don't know. They're up there, but boy, they sure do produce some comments.
Yeah. Clickbait, yeah, it's fine. I think McNabb's comments are worse, just because I can't even understand the basis for that. Mitchell's done a couple, you know, some borderline hits, so I guess I could see it a little. But Bell declining, I ignore it. I mean, goodness gracious.
Well, you go back and look at, I mean, Mitchell, and I even talked about this with David prior to the All-22 coming out on that interception by Lawrence Timmons. I was wondering if Manning gets a little bit more air underneath that ball, does that give Mike Mitchell that split second? Mitchell ended up hitting Danelle. In the end zone, even after Timmons picked that ball off, Timmons got there and half-heartedly, you know, he didn't know if that ball was going to be complete, so he had to, you know, put a half-hearted hit on him. It makes me wonder, had Eli gotten that ball up over the top of Timmons, maybe Mitchell breaks that up anyway. Who knows? But and I posted on Twitter late last night that hit on Will Tye that they rightly, and I'm so glad they got that right, looked at it and picked up the flag on Mike Mitchell on that play. And David and I had talked about this recently as well too. When you're opposing team, Alex, and you're looking at this game film, and Mike Mitchell's cleaning streets. Yeah. I mean,
she's the street cleaner.
I mean,
yeah.
Is that the perfect? I mean, is that the perfect nickname for Mike Mitchell right now?
It's a good one. I try to start it up. Yeah, get that going on Twitter.
Street cleaner, because he's rolling up the sidewalks, right? I mean, right now. I guess what I'm saying is opposing receivers see that when they see the tape, right?
Oh yeah, and I've talked about that for a while because Keith Butler's talked about it. That's one of those things. I think Mitchell has a lot of, you know, value that doesn't show up in the box score. And one of those things is, yeah, receivers watching film in this game and trying to figure out what the Steelers defense is all about, and they're watching the last 3 weeks, and Mitchell just put people to sleep. You're going to think about that when you go across the middle. I bet you Robert Woods is going to think about that when he tries to run an intermediate route or something like that. He's going to know where Mike Mitchell is at. So that hit on Will Tye was legal, clean. As, you know, Mitchell's tackling angle and hitting angle is just perfect. It's maybe the best in the league where he's able to get those big hits without getting the penalty. It's just one illegal hit to the head in the last 2 years, and that was Tyler Reifert going to the ground, basically. Although, one weird thing was, I listened to Ben McAdoo's press conference, and he said the reason why the refs, and this is what the refs told him, the reason why the refs did not call that hit on Mitchell was because they said the ball was uncatchable. They said it was not pass. They weren't talking about targeting. They said it wasn't pass interference because the ball was uncatchable. So that was, it was a clean hit, but I just thought that was an interesting ruling by the officials.
Yeah, that is interesting in there as well. He definitely de-cleated Will Tye, and as I wrote on Twitter, I think physics or something. I believe I was taught during an English class, science class, or math class in high school. I think that was broken down to me of what exactly happened on that play. I just didn't pay attention. Mm-hmm. But needless to say, impressive, and Mike Mitchell's really – Look, I mean, he's playing some of his best football right now for the Steelers. And before we wrap this up on top of it, Alex, have I given enough credit to Artie Burns and Sean Davis the last week or so? I don't want to get any more hate mail.
We will let Twitter be the judgment of us, Dave.
I hear you. Twitter is the judgment of all of us, I believe. Steeler fans, the mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging than reading some of my emails I get from listeners at times. let Craig guide you through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams. Even in Buffalo this week, if you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Oxane, a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com, or you can apply online. It's very easy to remember, Alex, blackandgoldlending.com. When you buy your first house, mm-hmm. I want you to go there. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551. NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Craig, thank you so much for sponsoring our show. Alex, anything to wrap up before I start closing this baby out?
Nope, that's everything.
All right, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. I'm going to have a puppy come Friday, Alex.
Woohoo!
I'm going to get us a new puppy on Thursday there. So we're
awesome.
Wish me luck with that. You can follow me on Twitter.
Good luck.
If you're prepared to see a lot of puppy pictures over the course of the next few weeks here at Steelers Depot, you can follow my co-host on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow today's co-host, Alex Cazora, on Twitter at Alex_Cazora. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. If you want to email the show, please do so, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Also, it's Christmas time. If you feel like donating to the cause to support the podcast, please go to SteelersDepot.com. You'll find that donate button. That'll take you to PayPal on the upper right-hand side of the website. Alex, thanks for sitting in for David today. We'll be back on Friday, folks. Thanks for listening. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.